Good afternoon, and yes, happy Tuesday, and welcome to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, bringing you stories from the road. And today, I'm coming to you from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, during my summer adventure driving across the United States. In the last few days, I've been in the solo part of my journey, having left my husband in Kansas City so he could fly back home to work. And I made my way through Bloomington, Indiana. I actually spent a couple days there because it's such a great, welcoming, small town toward the Indiana University, which is incredible, and just loved the people and the small restaurants and loved Bloomington, but got back on the road and made my way to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I didn't expect to do any interviews or build a show around Pittsburgh. This was actually strictly a tourist stop. Because I wanted to visit my aunt and uncle. I'd never been to their part of the world before. And my uncle is an incredible tour guide who knows fun facts and local lore about every single place. So I really just expected to get to know Pittsburgh. But I have a very savvy aunt who prides herself on kind of knowing what all of our interests are. And she mentioned to me that there was something interesting going on downtown at the convention center that I might want to check out. And that one statement made my visit to Pittsburgh one of the most interesting I've had in a long time. And I'm really excited to be sharing these stories from the road with you today of fursuited people and a city beautifying artist. So this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we are doing things a little differently this summer. We're not taking calls, but you can still be part of the conversation and share your thoughts or your questions or your ideas by sending me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, or you can like our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, and keep up with our upcoming shows, see photos of my guests or places that I've been this summer. And you can also follow my journey on our new Instagram, The Reluctant Therapist, and you can catch up with our previous shows at kcbx.org or by subscribing to our podcast, A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, through iTunes. Either way, we always like to keep up with you and see how you're doing this summer as well. So let me tell you a little bit about my first story here from Pittsburgh. As I said, I was prepared to spend the day just touring the city, but my aunt said there was an event at the convention center with all sorts of interesting people dressed as animals. And I thought, who would miss an opportunity to see something like that? And so the next thing I know, we're driving, you know, through this gorgeous town of Pittsburgh and loving all of the sights. And let me just say that the name Pittsburgh does not do justice at all to the city itself. It's incredible. It's the, you know, confluence of three rivers that come together. It's the city of 433 bridges that connect the downtown to all these beautiful wooded neighborhoods. There's 68 colleges and universities. The Carnegie Mellon University is there, and the Carnegies contributed beautiful parks and museums and arboretums, and it's just endless. The stadiums are gorgeous. They have revitalized their old downtown market section with restaurants. It's really a fun place to go, and it's very clean, and the people are super friendly. And so as we, you know, made our way through all of the spots, taking in the views from the top of Mount Washington, we finally came upon the convention center. And we're surrounded by people, yes, dressed in animal costumes, and some in partial animal wear and some not in any costumes at all. And on the big sign, it says, "Welcome to Anthrocon 2016, the largest furry convention in the world." All right. If you're not familiar, just picture Comic-Con or a Trekkie convention. But these are fans of anthropomorphized animals, kind of like cartoons, Bugs Bunny, or team mascots, or advertising icons like Tony the Tiger. They're fans of this art, these icons. But it's more than really just an appreciation for anthropomorphized woodland creatures. It's clear that it's a gathering of individuals who found their community here, a sense of place, a way of interacting, playing, and socializing with others who identify deeply with the animal world. And in in a lot of ways, they are living out their own animal personas, either by wearing animal costumes or what they call fursuits, or they are wearing just a tail or ears of a certain animal, or they are what is called unsuited, without a costume, but they all wear a placard, a drawing kind of around their neck that depicts an artist rendering, a cartoon rendering of their animal identity. And the group of attendees at Anthrocon as a whole are referred to as furries, no matter if you're suited or unsuited. And it's something else. It is a sight to behold, colorful, joyful, super playful, and clearly a refuge for people who probably feel like outcasts in their day-to-day life. I encourage you to take a moment, take a peek at our Facebook page or Instagram to see what I mean. But what I learned quickly here at Anthrocon is that furries and their security are very sensitive to any prying media people or any aggressive gawkers who are lurking around, because apparently the furry community had garnered some really unwanted attention a few years back through, I guess there was a series of high profile articles and a couple television shows that portrayed the furry scene as being associated with sexual fetishes or kinks. And, you know, I guess although there is a slight vibe of that sexual play or interactions, but really overall, it is clearly not the prominent focus or goal or theme of the convention. But when I tried to strike up a conversation with a spunky, mini-skirted, kitty cat ear and tail wearing young woman and her unsuited suitor known as Whistler, I was politely directed to take myself up to the media room in search of a press pass and, I guess, my media liaison or chaperone. And that's where I met Carl Jorgensen. Carl is one of the founding members of Anthrocon, which started over 20 years ago, I guess, in an apartment on a college campus. But Carl was there at the beginning, and this is where we begin with today's conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you're listening to Public Radio KCBX, and welcome to the world of the furries. And if you're feeling a little lost or confused about where we're going today, hang in there, because we have Carl as our guide. Wash away my troubles, wash away my pain, with the rain of Shambhala. Wash away my sorrow, wash away my shame, with the rain of Shambhala. Hey, yeah. Carl, what is Anthrocon? Why are all these people gathered?
We are the largest convention for people who are interested in anthropomorphic animals, and it's focused on anthropomorphic animal artwork and writing. It's like anthropomorphic animals are animals with human characteristics, so think cartoon animals. We are the largest convention of our kind in the world. We're actually going to exceed our last year's attendance this year.
So what is it that draws people to, because I'm looking around as we're talking, and it's not just animal costumes. Some people look like they're in kind of fantasy costumes. And you mentioned it draws artists and puppeteers and illustrators. And so what, I don't even know where to start with my question. It's a kind of a fandom of people who appreciate mascots, cartoons, the anthropomorphic. Say the word for me again.
Anthropomorphic.
Anthropomorphicization of animals, giving them human qualities, human characteristics.
Yeah.
So think Tony the Tiger.
Yes.
Okay. So yeah. I'm on the right track. So what is it that, why do people want to put these costumes on? Why do they come here?
Well, see, the difference between us and, say, like a science fiction convention, science fiction and, you know, fantasy conventions, they are geared more towards someone else's creation, like Star Wars. You go to a science fiction convention and you have, you know, a dozen people dressed as Princess Leia or Darth Vader or stormtroopers and so on. The difference with our convention is everybody has their own unique individual character. There's not really a lot of, you know, mainstream, you know, characters. Everybody's come up with their own character, their own backstory. Everybody here has their own unique character, you know, creation. There's a lot of creativity in this fandom.
So what I'm seeing are not costumes that you would, you know, buy necessarily at a costume shop. These are designs that people have created themselves and then had built or maybe made for themselves. Mm-hmm. So that identity and that character becomes kind of their alternative persona?
Well, I should clarify, there's only about 20% of our attendees are in costume, because the costumes are very expensive and stuff like that. So it's sort of a misconception that, like, everybody wanders around in costume. That's only about 20% of our attendees that have the costumes. And some people build them themselves, and some people get them, you know, commissioned. They can cost, you know, thousands of dollars. They are quite expensive.
And they're quite spectacular. I mean, as we're standing here, we're seeing cats and wolves and deer and, I mean, just incredible details and the beauty and the fur. And as you said, I'm noticing that it seemed like everyone who's suited, I think that's the term, the suited costume, it's also with a handler. So they seem to work in pairs. Is that always true, that there's someone who's in the costume and a handler with them?
I think it used to be a lot more common, but I think as the fandom has grown tremendously in the past years, I don't know if there's handlers. So I don't know if they're very common to have handlers these days. It's always good to have one. I would personally recommend having a handler, just because it makes it easier. The costumes are very hot, and so it's good to have somebody there to kind of, you know, watch out for you and help you, you know, navigate, you know,
the crowd.
Yeah, navigate the crowd, you know, stairs, that kind of thing can be dangerous. You know, some of the costumes you can't really see too well out of them. So, yeah, it's always a good idea to have a handler.
So of the 20% of people who are, you know, suited with their personas, what are the 80% of the visitors coming for? What do they get from the convention experience, the ones that aren't dressed but are here?
Mm-hmm. We have a lot of panels and workshops. There's panels on how to draw, you know, there's writing workshops, we have entertainment, we have, you know, shows, we have dances. Our big event yesterday was the fursuit parade, where we had 2,100 people in costume, and that was great. The city of Pittsburgh came out to see that. But we have concerts, we have dances, you know, and a lot of art and writing workshops. And we also have a charity auction this year, benefiting the Pittsburgh Zoo and PPG Aquarium. Every year we select an animal-related charity local to Pittsburgh to donate, you know, to raise money for. So the charity auction is a big part of this as well.
So when you talk about fandom, I think people understand Comic-Con or Star Trek conventions. So is fandom kind of the theme of all of those kind of specialty conventions, and is this just a kind of another specialty convention?
Yeah, exactly. This is basically, if you imagine a science fiction convention, this is basically just like a science fiction convention, but for cartoon animals is our focus.
All right, so you're going to take me around, and we're going to see some of the activities. I think there's a dance contest going on and some dealers' workshops, and maybe get a chance to speak to a couple of suited people who might be willing to tell us about their life.
Sure, yeah.
All right, so we've just walked into, it looks like a big, this looks like a convention center.
Yep.
And what room are we in now?
Okay, so this is the Anthrocon dealer's room. And what we have here is we have the vendors and merchants that show up to sell artwork and comics. And they have, you know, buttons and T-shirts and just anything you can imagine, really. This is where all the you know, selling of you know, furry related merchandise goes on. There's people here who will draw your character for you. There's our charity auction table is over there. We're raising money for the Pittsburgh Zoo and PPG Aquarium, like I mentioned. There's comics. There's people sell costumes. You know, a little bit of everything.
So basically, like any convention you go to, there is the economy that supports the fandom, right? There's
yes.
the things you can buy. So if Kitty Puff were my furry alter ego from mm-hmm. third grade, and I wanted to wear, because you're wearing a placard that has your mm-hmm. alter ego, there's someone here I could walk up to and describe my Kitty Puff character, and they would make me a placard.
Absolutely, absolutely. Like I mentioned, not many people have the costumes because they're so expensive, but people like to get drawings of their character that they put on badges or into sketchbooks and stuff like that. And, you know, we have a lot of artists in this fandom that will draw your character for you.
Okay. Where to?
We have our guests of honor this year that have tables here in the dealer's room as well. We have Tracy Butler, who has a comic called Lackadaisy Cats. You can see her booth right over there. She's got our theme this year is the Roaring Twenties, and so she goes very well with our theme. It's basically a bunch of cats, you know, a bunch of cat characters during Prohibition.
Which is my spirit animal, apparently mm-hmm. cat, so uh-huh. we have to talk to her.
Okay, cool. And then we've got a voice actor, Trevor Duvall, who's done some work with different characters, and we've done Joaquin Baldwin, who is a layout designer, worked on several different projects, including Zootopia, which is currently out in the theaters and very popular.
Yeah, so is Zootopia kind of a furry fantasy film, basically? I mean, is this something that would be very popular with the fandom? Would it become part of the fandom?
Oh yeah, it was very popular when it came out. There were actually people who went to, you know, people here in the furry fandom that arranged screenings, you know, went to theaters and stuff like that, and they had a full house, sold out shows because everybody wanted to go see it.
So is something like Zootopia then going to mainstream the anthropomorphic or the anthrocon world?
It's definitely made it more popular. Yeah, it's definitely made people take more notice of us. Yeah.
So, and I see a lot of families walking around too. Mm-hmm. There's something about that kind of finding something that you love to do as a family or feel, you know, connected to. So, are the parents suited more, or are parents getting their kids suited? How do you see families getting involved, or are they mostly just coming to see the characters?
I think maybe it's hard to tell. I think that maybe their kids got interested in coming and seeing what the convention is all about, and so their parents kind of, you know, come along with them. You know, we kind of require if the kids want to come along, they need parental consent forms and stuff like that. So that's why I think that some of the parents tag along anyway. We've seen a lot of kids show up this year.
All right, I'm ready. If you're just tuning in, this is Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX, and you're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, coming to you today from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and Anthrocon 2016, a gathering of furries and those who are drawn to the world of anthropomorphized animals. And we continue with our conversation. So now we've walked up to a booth that has costume parts that mm-hmm. are pre-done. So why would people choose this? Because you said that people create their own, but...
Right. Well, some people, if they can't afford, like, the entire full furry costume, the full animal costume, which can cost thousands of dollars, if they can't afford, like, a costume, sometimes just they'll buy, like, here they have the clip-on ears or the clip-on tail that they can wear. You know, just you'll see a lot more people wandering around in that than the full-body costumes.
I was thinking, you know... You were talking about some ears that actually move. I mean, people have gotten pretty sophisticated with the animatronic
yes.
and tails that swish. And
Yeah. I've seen online there's advertisements for the tails that have like a motor that makes them wag back and forth. But also there's ones that have the ears that have like a little sensor that will make like the ears move according to what mood you're in and stuff. Like if you're startled or if you're thinking, the ears will, you know.
So it's like it's
forth.
Tapping into our brain and somehow.
Yeah, I don't know how it works. I don't know how it works, but yeah, it's pretty fascinating.
So, Carl, what is it that drew you? You know, you're the media liaison, but I imagine this isn't your full-time job. So what drew you to Anthrocon, and why is this special to you?
I've been coming here since before the beginning, actually. I've been coming to every Anthrocon in our entire 20-year history.
Was it your dorm room that it all started?
No. But I was at one of the original parties where it all started. But what drew me to the fandom and the going to these conventions and stuff is I've always been a fan of cartoon animals and, you know, Walt Disney and, Warner Brothers, you know, cartoons and so on. And it wasn't until around 93, 94 that I realized there was a fandom for this and, you know, conventions. And I attended my first furry convention in 1994. And I was like, wow, there's actually other people. There's actually a whole other group of people that's out there that enjoy cartoon animals and stuff. And they all have their own unique characters. That's one of the things that I like so much about the fandom is that there's so much creativity and everybody has their own unique individual character.
And so do you have a character yourself that when you're not having to lead press around that you wear to the convention?
But I do have my own character that I created, and I have artwork of it.
So is that what I'm looking at, this picture on your shirt? Can you pronounce it? Because I can't pronounce it.
That's Zydex. He's a unicorn character and stuff. And you can see a little clipboard and stuff like that. I had him actually commissioned from the artwork was drawn by a friend of mine here for this convention and stuff like that. So this is me sort of, you know, with my clipboard and stuff. Because this Anthrocon is a working convention for me. I'm on staff and stuff. I try to enjoy the convention when I have some free time and stuff like that, but you know, this is generally work. This is my other work. Everybody here, like I said, they've you know, you ask anybody, they've got like their own, you know, their own character, their own backstory. There's a lot of creativity in this fandom, and that's one of the things that I like so much about it.
All right, well, let's go see some more of the creativity.
Sure. Like that too.
So we've walked up to Fur Villa. Mm-hmm. So this whole, has this been created, it looks like online, kind of like a second life or a imaginary life sort of thing?
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
So did this become developed because of Anthrocon?
Not necessarily because of Anthrocon, but because of the fandom. People are interested in online role-playing games where they can play a furry character and stuff like that. So this is, you know, probably, you know, there's several games out there. There's Fervilla, there's things like Furcadia, there's Second Life, as you mentioned. There's a lot of online games, and people, when they can play like a furry character online, they you know, it tends to be very popular with us.
So do people then take their character that they've created and put it into this so it can carry on many levels here at the convention and then online, and then I'd imagine that they communicate, or you know, people who are furries communicate together as a furry community online in some ways, like chat rooms?
Oh yeah, there's plenty of there's furry chat rooms on I think IRC, and there's text-based role-playing games, as you know, games, quote-unquote games, as well, where you can play a furry character as well.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Tell me your name.
My name is Jesse.
Hi, Jesse. I'm Elizabeth. So, Jesse, you are here at Anthrocon. Is this what you do? Do you come every year, or is this new for you?
This is my third year here. I make my living off of traveling and doing conventions and stuff, and this one is the best one in Pittsburgh, so.
And is it any conventions, or is it just Anthrocon conventions?
I do mostly fantasy conventions and, like, gaming, but my work blends in with the Anthro, so I also attend those.
So do people come to you? I can't really describe it. It's like a dragon flying with
an animal mistress next to him. I mean, it's beautiful. Am I close?
Oh, no. This one in particular is from The Lord of the Rings. Okay. It's Gandalf versus the Witch King.
You can see how clearly schooled I am in that topic. I wasn't close. My husband will never speak to me again. But it's beautiful.
Thank you.
And so when visitors to Anthrocon come to your booth, are they buying art or are they asking you to create characters for them?
I do both print sales, which is art I've already created, and then I also do commission sales, which is when they give me like their character or description or something, and then I create that for them.
And how long have you been doing this work?
Almost half my life.
You look very young, so that's why I was asking. You don't look like someone who's had 25 years of experience. You probably aren't even 25 yet, are you?
I am.
Okay.
I am. I've been doing this as my 11th year doing shows.
Your work is wonderful. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you.
So I've come upon Wolfie, who is a wolf, and Hillary, who is a...
crow.
A crow. And so let's start with you, Hillary. Where are you from and what brings you to Anthrocon?
I'm from Washington. I'm here to see my friends.
And so is this your first convention here in Pittsburgh?
No, this is my third time here at Anthrocon.
And so what drew you to your character, your furry identity?
This is actually my Dungeons & Dragons character, which is a tabletop role-playing game. And I really like playing with my character so much. And it seems like if I'm going to wear an animal person costume, this seems like a good place to do it. So I did.
And so how do you find this community? And what does it bring to your life?
Well, mostly a lot of friends. I've met a ton of friends through this community. And that's why I'm here to see them. And I'm having just a great time just walking around talking to people I know.
Oh, thank you so much. And Wolfie,
yes.
So this is a very detailed costume. And Carl was telling me that what's unique about it is that your jaw goes up and down. Mm-hmm. So tell me what brought you to Anthrocon and to the character of Wolfie.
This is my first Anthrocon. I'm from North Dakota. Got a couple of friends who are also from North Dakota. One's a regular here. This was the 20th anniversary. My first trip to Anthrocon, figured it was a perfect opportunity to come out and visit on an anniversary show.
So, but I imagine this isn't the first time you've been Wolfie. So.
Actually, I'm rather new to the fandom. It's one of those things where growing up, my appreciation for what it is, I didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. When I come to the realization of what it was, it's like, oh, okay, that's cool. I can do this, I can do that, and then kind of built from there.
And so you grew up in North Dakota, is that?
No, I was actually born in Texas, grew up in Colorado, went back to Texas, and then ended up in North Dakota.
So I'd imagine... Did the Wolfie character come from growing up in this parts of the country, or where did it come from?
Wolfie, what it is, I have always in my entire life have had a deep fascination and bond with wolves. I identify with them. It probably has to do with the way I grew up. I was kind of an outcast. And, well, wolves in fairy tales and in real life are outcasts. Mm-hmm. Identified with that, I identify with being misunderstood. So it just became something I got kind of an attachment to, and I very strongly identify with it.
So yeah. What does this bring to your life when you're not at Anthrocon? How has this character of Wolfie in the Second Life enhanced your sense of well-being or who you are?
It allows me to kind of connect, maybe probably even to some degree disconnect from real life a little bit. You know, you unplug. You go and you be something you can't in real life for a while. You get your fill of it, and then you come back to real life a little bit refreshed, and you can carry on with the day-to-day grind somewhere.
And you're the handler then? So what is the role of handler for the suited?
Basically, we just make sure that they're all right and they're safe, you know. We just make sure that people don't grab onto them and mean harm to them.
I read also that I wasn't supposed to scritch you.
That's all right. Go ahead. He's a friendly wolf.
You can't, like, grab on and pull on the fur, rub real hard.
If you just go like this to them, that's fine.
Yeah. If you're, like, do beyond the ear or back here or something like that, I'll do the leg tap thing and the whole bit. That's,
and so do you ever suit? Is it Teshi?
Yeah, it's Teshi. And I'm going to be making a suit. This is actually my first fur con ever, so. And I love it. Yeah.
And so what has this experience brought to you?
It just brings me to what I knew, and I started on Second Life, too, and... What it is it allows you to open up. I used to be an incredibly shy person. And it just, it opens you up because you meet all these people that have the same fashion as you. The fascination of everything that you do, and it just allows you to connect.
So imagine before Anthrocon, if a woman had walked up and stuck a microphone in your mouth, you would have not wanted to...
Fine, actually, because I like talking with people.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I mean, because I started when I was 12 years old. Now I'm 36, but I just never got to the cons. I would be, I was what I call a closet furry.
Okay.
Even my folks don't know. Oh. They thought I was at a Star Trek convention.
Yeah, that's a story for
so
me.
Yeah, what? So what would that be if your parents? I mean, do you think they'd be concerned if you were here being a furry?
No, not now, because I've kind of opened their eyes to a lot of things. They used to be the redneck type. So now I've gotten them to stop using bad words that we shouldn't, and I just work with them a lot. And actually,
so in a way, this life of yours has expanded your parents' horizon.
Yeah, and everyone around me I found open up to you. Especially, I love to see the little kids. They run up and hug them, and it's so cute. And it's a treat to see.
That's what I've felt today since I've been here, is this overwhelming sense of love. I mean, every person I've walked towards has come back towards me, and that's beautiful.
Nice enough before.
So I'm here with Whistler, is that correct?
Correct.
And Aletha.
Aletha.
And so you were the first two people that I walked up to and started talking to at the convention. So Whistler, tell me what draws you to Anthrocon, why you're involved, and about your character.
Well, it's the biggest furry con in the world right now, and I've been a fur since I was 11 years old when I was in the hospital and I saw two suitors coming in to cheer up the kids who were in there. And something I always wanted to do. And it's been like a big help with me from being in the military. Nice transition from when I got out. I had a family to come back to.
And what is your character, the Whistler?
He is a demonic direwolf. I like extinct species, and it just always has been drawn to me. I've always seen wolves all my life, and just something that I was drawn to.
So you said you served in the military. Thank you for your service. Were you able to have your furry alternative life there, or was this something that happened after your service?
All of the guys over there, they understood. Everyone had their own little thing, their outlet, and everyone pretty much respected it and didn't pick at anyone for it because it's just one big family.
So what does this world bring to your mental health and well-being?
It's a great escape because I wear a full suit, and when I'm getting real anxious at a con, I just put my suit on, and it's my own little world. Everyone comes up to you, gives you hugs, talks to you, and they can't see your expression. You could be freaking out inside, but on the outside, you're all happy, giggly, and bubbly, so it's always real nice. You could be having the worst day of your life, put your suit on, and you're happy.
Is there a Whistler life outside of the convention? You know, is this in your day-to-day life? Does the furry world, is it involved?
I'm always talking to a bunch of my friends who are furs on Telegram and other chats. I meet up with a bunch of friends. Most of my friends are furs, so it's always there. It's always a part of my life. Granted, at work, I try to hide it, but that's because of the field I'm in.
And what is that field?
Mechanic and an iron worker, so it's kind of just one of those fields where it's like, probably shouldn't say this. Don't want to get picked on.
But is it hard to have to separate something that's so close to your heart from your day-to-day experience?
It is, especially when your friends come in to get their cars fixed, and it's like, hey, Whistler, what's up? And I'm like, Tim. It's like, don't want to. It's a little hard, but as soon as I get home from work, it's just my family knows, and they're just like fine with it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for talking to me, and enjoy the rest of your con.
Thank you.
You're listening to one of our summer shows from the road. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist, coming to you from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and Anthrocon 2016, home of the furries. And we're doing things a little differently this hour. We're not taking calls, but you can still be part of our conversation by sending me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, or you can like our Facebook page or follow us on our new Instagram @thereluctanttherapist. And you can catch up on previous shows at kcbx.org or podcast through iTunes. We conclude our visit with the furries by hearing from researcher Dr. Gerbasi, who has spent the better part of the last decade building a team of researchers to study the furry fandom. I am here with Dr. Gerbasi, and tell me your affiliation or your association with Anthrocon.
Since 2006, my research team has collected data at Anthrocon about what it means to be a furry and all sorts of related things. We now have two websites where we have a lot of our research results available. We have peer-reviewed scholarly journals. And I think probably one of the most important things that has come out of our research is it has dispelled a lot of the negative media portrayals of what the furry fandom is about. I'm a social psychologist. I have two colleagues who are also social psychologists. One is at a postdoc at Iowa State. One is at Texas A&M Commerce. I have a sociologist colleague at University of Waterloo in Ontario, and two new colleagues. One is right here in Duquesne. She's a clinical psychologist, and the other is a marketing person at West Virginia University. So from 2006, where it was basically me, we have grown to really a team of people with, you know, interest in the field of behavioral science. Studying fandoms per se is kind of a new thing.
And so what, tell people who might not know, what is this phenomenon of fandom?
Fandom is basically people coming together around a shared interest. You know, could be anime, could be fantasy sports fans, it could be Barbie dolls, you know, model trains. It's people like to be with others who have similar interests.
And so what is it about the world of the furry that is so interesting to people? How does it fill a need for them?
I would say that, you know, from the beginning of time, really, there were humans when there were humans and other species of animals. Humans have been intrigued by other species, and really from a point of view of evolution and survival, if you don't understand the natural world around you, you're at a huge disadvantage, you know? So it's almost natural for people to be interested in animals, and we also tend to anthropomorphize other things, not just beings, but, you know, machines. I mean, how many times do you tell your computer, oh, you're being really bad today, you know, that kind of thing. So this process of anthropomorphizing is a pretty normal human way of going around understanding the world. So the fact that we have people really interested in, you know, anthropomorphic critters is not at all surprising. I mean, go back to Aesop's Fables, for heaven's sakes, and, you know, the earliest things that most kids play with are stuffed animals, and, you know, I mean, it's normal, I think.
So in a way, even wanting to adopt the character of the stuffed animal you grew up loving in some way?
You might, or you feel comfortable with it, or, you know, in terms of the furry fandom, creating this persona identity is a way to try on another way of being. Maybe if you're a shy person and you put on a fursuit, you can do something that you wouldn't normally do. I have a fursuit. I'm not really a furry, but I have a fursuit, and it has a personality which is way more outgoing than mine. So I was in the parade yesterday, and I made up little toy capsules and put yellow ribbons with black paw prints on them, Pittsburgh colors, and capsules. And along the parade route, I'm passing out things and, you know, high-fiving. I mean, I wouldn't have walked up to you and said, hey, you're a press person. You really ought to talk to me because I might know something you want to find out about. I would not have done that. But in that fursuit, maybe I would have.
And so what do you find that it's brought? Because it seems that's a theme that a lot of people have said, I'm shy outside of this, or it gives me a creative outlet. How do you think it helps people's mental health and well-being in general?
I think they feel comfortable. And one of my own student helpers at the end of a panel that we just finished a little while ago said to the people participating, he said, I feel more alive when I'm here than any other time. And, you know, you can feel comfortable being who you are and who you want to be and feel less constrained by the normal, oh, my God, you know, I've got to be in this little well-behaved, these are the rules, you know, more free in a good way.
And so what is your work as a researcher since 2006, studying fandom? What has surprised you about the research?
What surprised me is how diverse and interesting it is and the variety of people we meet. And I think another thing that, you know, I didn't expect, because I really didn't know what I was getting into, was in all the times I've been here every year since 2007. I couldn't go in 2006. I've only had one negative interaction with a person. One.
And, of course, in our regular life.
Yeah, oh, yeah, in our regular life.
It can be many per day that you have a negative.
Exactly.
So it seems like everyone is drawn here because they're searching for...
It's comfortable and it's fun.
And it was so fun. And when we talk about maintaining our mental health and well-being, what we all really crave is connection, community, and the freedom to express our authentic, creative selves. And after my afternoon there, I can tell you that the furries seem to have found all of that. As has my next guest, Randy Gilson. He's an artist, a purveyor of positivity, and the creator of Randyland, which is his home he turned into an art museum and an expression of love to the rough north side of Pittsburgh. When you walk into Randy's courtyard, it's an incredible festival of color and recycled and repurposed found objects of art and messages of love and hope and authenticity painted on every single surface. Randyland is something that actually must be seen to be appreciated. So please check out our Facebook page or Instagram to see the photos of Randyland, or go ahead and Google Randyland Pittsburgh to take it all in. And although seeing the property known as the most painted house in the world will absolutely lifted my spirits and will fill anyone who sees it with joy, having the chance to hear from Randy himself, to hear him speak with such passion and devotion and honesty, is just as magical as the world he's created at his home. So once I stepped into the courtyard filled with visitors, they were all sitting around taking photos. Many were relaxing on brightly adorned garden furniture. Every person was completely attuned to the Owen Wilson lookalike, which is Randy Gilson with his paint-spattered clothes and his infectious spirit. The minute I stood there and took in the scene, I knew I had to share Randy with you. So this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and fasten your seatbelts because this is Randyland.
Nice. It's a place for art, it's a place for fun, it's a place for everyone. It's Randyland.
Everybody calls me Randyland. I didn't call me Randyland. The world started calling me Randyland because I started putting parks and gardens and happiness everywhere. And all of a sudden, I didn't even have my own identity anymore. It was all about Randyland. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Watch what you do, I tell folks. Watch what you do.
Well, when you start putting your heart out there, right, then people start to want to associate you with what your heart work is doing.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit. So we're sitting here in Randyland's garden in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It's colorful. There's pergolas with intricate paintings. There's repurposed art. I've taken pictures because I think it's going to be difficult to describe. But Randy, what inspired you to even start this? And we're not in one of the higher end neighborhoods in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, are we?
Right, right. Yeah. Northside actually was the first city outside of Pittsburgh, which is downtown. When the bridges were built, the roads were built, everybody decided there was a lot of money in their pockets and they didn't need to stay here. The houses were small. They had big dreams, big goals. They wanted better churches, better schools, bigger house. They wanted a dog, maybe horses. Who knows? The point is they wanted to escape. With this whole neighborhood collapse, like all around the world, neighborhoods collapse. Well, when it comes right down to it, people collapse too. So the thing is, I collapsed as a child, and so I related to this neighborhood because I understood that I was not going to have what everybody else had. So this neighborhood spoke to me, and it it called me. The squatters moved here. There were a lot of gangs, a lot of guns, a lot of drugs and things like that. Every city, I would imagine, in the United States of America started out with a small little community. And as the city evolved, then everybody started leaving as they started to become, well, wealthier. But then the folks that didn't have that money, they moved into those little communities. And actually, then they were abandoned. And they didn't get the support systems. There was no money there. So they felt, well, they felt like garbage. Mm-hmm. It's a sad thing to call people garbage. But I remember people said, don't ever go to the north side. It's very dangerous.
And so you had this spark when you were young, kind of found this energy to persevere. And you ended up over here on the north side at 18, homeless, finding work. How did you find this corner, this spot, and start making it what it is?
Well, okay, and that was when I was 18. I was actually not homeless. I was living in an apartment, okay. So I did get that. But I was going to CCAC, and they had philosophy. Oh, my goodness gracious, Descartes said, I think, therefore I am. Well, they didn't have that in school. If they would have had psychology or philosophy in school, I would have liked going to school. But I never went to school. I was an E student. Nobody believed in me, so I didn't believe in me. And all of a sudden, college had philosophy. Oh, my goodness. They need to put more of that in school for sure, psychology, because that really helped me out. Well, I came over here, and garbage was everywhere. It was terrible. And I started cleaning up the lots, and everybody thought it was nuts and started calling the police on me.
Because you were helping beautify things.
Yeah, but they didn't know. And most people, when they get doing a project, they do a small little project, and then they hurry up and they go away. They don't finish the project. I did it over and over and over. 1 year, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. And then all of a sudden, people started saying, this guy's making a change. Millions of houses torn down. Whole brick, half brick, Belgian block, flagstone, window lintels. All this stuff was being thrown in the garbage. But yet they were materials. One man's junk is another man's treasure. So I learned that my eyes were my tools to see things. My hands were my tools to grab things. My mind was a tool to think of what to do with these things. And my ears were my tools to say the thank yous of when people saw the blessings of what I created. So I started doing parks and gardens, taking my shovel, digging up all these old shrubbery. And now I have 800 gardens, 50 vegetable gardens, and 8 parks.
All just in the Pittsburgh in this, proper?
In this area. Wow. Only in this area. This building right over here to my side, I bought this building for $10,000 on a credit card. So I started thinking of myself as a tool chest. If I was a tool chest, and if I don't use my tools, they would get rusted, broken, misplaced, forgotten, or I don't know how to use them anymore. And I thought, well, wait a minute, a tool chest, if I was trying to find my journey, who am I? What can I be? How can I help myself?
And others, it seems.
And others, yeah, and others. Oh, my goodness. I get 200 or 300 yellow school buses over here. I get 300 to 400 people a day, but 7,000, 8,000 people a month at my house.
Just coming to walk through your gardens.
Walking through Randyland.
And what does it do for them to step into this place?
They come into Randyland, and they say that Randyland changed their life.
Tell me how, though.
It's interesting because it's the house of happiness. They say that they have never felt to be in a place of so much love. Mm-hmm. You see, I was searching for love as a child. When I looked in the mirror and I found myself, I realized I needed to love me. And then I started wearing that love on the outside and started putting it in my hands, started doing it in my projects, starting to talk to the children and their parents and their parents. Before you know it, I have 5 generations of people that know me around here. So I guess I'm grandpa. That's neat. And now the visitors come by and they say that this is the most painted house in the world.
I wouldn't be surprised because every detail of this section, is it all 3 homes that you own?
I do not own the one to our left. Okay. That's a neighbor, but I own 5 properties, 2 houses.
On a credit card. And so now each piece you've brought in, you've painted every single parcel of it, from wood to doors to chairs that are going up and down. When you walk through this space, how do you feel?
Well, I was a misfit, so I started collecting misfit things.
Okay.
I collected toys out of the garbage, and I started fixing them to put them underneath the Christmas tree, so I became Santa Man. So I learned that my struggles became my strength. See, all struggles are actually your mentors, and it's very, very, very important to have your struggles. The sad thing is, if I might say, if I was a parent, I am not a parent, but I would really say that parents need to give the kids more struggles. Because what happens is they make the decisions for them. They always give them their answers all the way through the development stages. And then they graduate from college and they get out and they start to perform their journeys and they still can't make their own decisions. So they keep coming back to their parents over and over again. My struggles taught me at an early age that they were my gifts. But if you don't open your gifts, you will not find the message of the gift. Some of your struggles are as easy as an on and off button, and they're easy to solve and fix. Some are like an IKEA box with no direction, a million pieces. Where do you begin? Well, I found out that if you say thank you to a struggle, the next time your teacher, your parents, a situation comes up, and they you're homeless, you don't have any food, there's no money, there's no nothing. Trust me, I'm scared every time the bills come in. I'm a waiter. I only make $20, $30, $40 a day in the morning. I just serve coffee and sandwiches or omelets or pancakes. And when my bills come, I'm freaked out. I'm scared. I never open my bills the first day they come. I have to settle myself down, calm myself down before I can even think about bills. Ooh, that's the scariest part of my life because I'm always broke in money.
So even today in this beautiful art-filled yard that you've created, you make your day-to-day living as a waiter.
A waiter, yes.
Still.
And now what's going to be cool is I'm so happy that now it's like I'm like, I guess, an ambassador for the underdog. Cool.
Yes.
And so the neat thing is a guy like me should have never got Randy Land, should have never got any land, should have never got a home, should have never be maybe a spokesperson for like people and love and happiness and joy, because I didn't have that. I was cheated, I felt, in many ways. A lot of people like me would have crawled in a box, gone under the bridge, gave up, or only did half of their potential. But I decided that my struggles were my gifts, and I needed to start asking for my gifts and asking for my struggles daily, wanting more struggles over and over and over. Because the more struggles that I conquered, the more that it was like a sidewalk of bricks, the more that got me to my future, my journey, my adventures. So my struggles, by saying thank you to your struggles, you now own your struggles, that they don't control you. You are now controlling them. So that's what I tell a lot of the school kids that come in, that like, don't be afraid if your teacher or your mom and dad ask you to do something. Say, thank you. I'm going to do the best I can. And when you find that your mind opens up, it's like a giant file cabinet. You start finding out, instead of thinking one way, you got maybe 10 ways of thinking. And if you think those 10 ways, that you're growing, that you're being inspired. It's like a little seed. If you do not feed that seed, the seed will only grow so socially, like so much. But if you feed it like a Miracle-Grow, then it will grow. Well, I started absorbing love and happiness, understanding, creativity, and my struggles fed me all of these. And before you know it, now I got so happy that people call me one of the happiest guys in the world. I really believe that my blessings now have to be put in a book. I want to write a book, Randy Land at the Yellow Castle. It's going to be like the tortoise and the hare, the little toothed corner, the ugly duckling, the backward little fella that was homeless and called white trash, garbage, stupid, dumb, ugly, loser, dadless, poor. Don't ever, never, ever, 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 never, ever, never wear a coat that people give you if it's not a coat that you're proud to wear. You need a filter, filter, filter. Negatives out, positives in. Negatives out, positives in. And that's how I fixed me.
So I'm looking around. Would you say that, because I'm talking to you and I'm hearing your energy, I'm feeling it in such profound ways, and then I see everything around me, I think, is this your heart made visual?
Yes, but I have to say, it's my heart gathering other hearts.
Okay.
I am a sponge.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. No, this is, Randy Land is not Randy Land. Randy Land is our land, interpreted by Randy. I am only the conduit. I am only the speaker, the dreamer of Randy Land. Randy Land, the paints that you feel on the walls and the things you see on the ground, we all are misfits in some way or another. There's always something in the back of everyone's head or somebody's heart that makes you feel maybe a little bit different. You wish you were a little better in a different way. And how do you get out? What do you... How do you find your strength? How do you get that negative out of you so that you have more positive? Well, I give Randyland away, and Randyland will be a nonprofit for the funding of art, theater, dance, musical programming. Here I am, a poor guy, a guy that doesn't make any money, and yet I'm giving away a multi-million-dollar foundation and going to write a book about it, how my struggles taught me my strength. And my strength is only my strength if I re-gift it. Your gifts are to give away. If you keep them for yourself, then you don't appreciate them. You have to make sure that you pass on all of your blessings so that you will always have more to open.
Well, and it's remarkable because here we are in Pittsburgh and your door is open. As we've been sitting here, people come in, they're walking around your yard. And I mean, you must have a lot of faith and trust in humankind to just invite strangers. And you said 7,000 people a year wander through.
Oh, more than that, 100,000 a year. Under the 7,000 a month.
Oh.
Oh, no, no, no. 300 to 500 people a day, 30 days a month. You figure it out. Times 12 months out of the year. Last year, we couldn't close for the winter. The snow didn't come in. People are outside up to 8 o'clock that night. They come at 8 o'clock in the morning. I'm not even open. They knock on my door. I had to take my doorbell off. Isn't that funny?
They were so excited to get...
So many people want to find the most painted house in the world.
And I heard you also talk a little bit about, you know, you're getting some celebrity cred going, that there's a documentary that you're involved, that you're a part of, and a song that you're a part of. Can you talk about that?
Right. Yeah, Hollywood's put me in a giant documentary. Actually, it's out right now. Went to the Newport Beach Film Festival. They took me to the United Nations. So went around to all the film festivals in the world. The director, I guess you call him the director, they went ahead and they emailed me about a month and a half ago, coming back to America. It will be in the local theater soon. And the new documentary is called Pursuing Happiness. They consider me one of the happiest people in the world. A rock band wrote a giant song about me. And this guy, this great videographer, he came by and just did this wonderful music video. So if you ever go to YouTube and if you just Google Randyland music video by the Danzas, D-A-N-Z-A-S, this, it was a punk rock group. And I was scared. I thought, you can't slam dance Randyland. People now know that I'm a testimony for the underdog, for the little guy, for the visionary, for the lonely kid, for the backward fella, for the guy that didn't know what to do, how to do, if he could do. But you know what? I can say one thing. Look in the mirror and see your face and realize you're a gift from heaven. You're a gift from your parents. Now you need to be a gift to yourself. And when you're a gift to yourself, you can be a gift to others. Put on your own shoes. Get your own get. It's your world. We're only here for a short time. Don't worry about what you're not, because you're more than what you're not. You're just plain beautiful. Oh, yeah.
That's a perfect way to wrap it up. Randy, thank you so much for sitting with me and sharing your heart with me.
Elizabeth, I am so happy to meet you. My goodness gracious, you are so sweet. You're sweetie pie. You're beautiful. You're kind. I love your voice. I love your energy, your heart. I am so honored that you interviewed me. And will you please make sure you send this back to me?
Absolutely.
Because I want to share this with the world. Isn't that weird that people around the world talking about this little guy in Pittsburgh that likes to paint?
It's the best. And now I'm going to share your voice and your heart with the people on the West Coast, and they'll be coming to find you.
Well, thank you. Hey,
thank
have
you.
A blessed day. Can I get
you.
A hug?
Absolutely.
Thank
Let's
you.
Hug.
Yay.
Can never get enough hug. And that says it all about my visit to Pittsburgh. It was all about peace, joy, love, and self-acceptance. And if we could all experience a bit more of that, wouldn't the world be a much better place? Thank you for listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and thank you for supporting Public Radio KCBX and my summer sending stories from the road.
Anymore, and I'm high and low. I've been shore to shore to shore. If there's a shortcut, I'd have found it. But there is no easy way around it. Light of the world, shine on me. Love is the answer. Shine on us all.